You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. It's David Baer here, and today I'm going to be chatting with Chase Neely, who is joining me from Tennessee. I'm really excited to get into this conversation. But first, I want to share a little story, because before I ever meet my guests, if I haven't met them before, I have a couple of questions for them. And one of the things that I want to know is, like, what's the big takeaway that you'd love the audience to get? Well, Chase had a really interesting answer, and it resonated with me partially because I'm located here in Portland, Oregon, the hometown of the guy whose quote he sent my way as part of the inspiration. So I'm gonna share a little bit about the quote, and then we'll dig into the guy and why you were so inspired by this. So the quote was, "Don't waste years fighting uphill battles against locked doors. Improve and invent until you get a huge response. Marketing is a science, but it's inexact. You have to stay creative, find successful tactics, and then double down on them." So Chase, what's that all about?
David, it's like I was reading that quote in the book, and the very first time I read it, I said, oh, that's my life. That's what I have been doing my entire life. Because as you guys know, any marketing endeavor is going to be the most frustrating and most rewarding thing that you can do, because the only time that you fail in marketing is when you give up. And so you just have to keep pounding your head against the wall, and then you move down a little bit and move down a little bit, and all of a sudden you're at the door and you just take off from there. So it really resonated with me when I saw that quote. And of course, it's the founder of CD Baby who gave us that. Yeah. And so just being able to put words to the experience that we have as marketers was hugely inspiring to me.
So I quickly want to make sure that we get you actually properly introduced, because I often jump ahead to, like, the story. But you have a marketing business now, and you had, I think, your very first job out of school was a marketing job. But you have kind of an unusual story that got you there, and I wonder if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit of that background.
You know, I always say, David, it's a typical story, just like you draw it up. I went to school in Nashville, Tennessee, where I am now, for music, classical voice. And in that process, I realized that I wasn't going to make it as a singer. But I did know that I wanted to help singers and I wanted to help creative people. And so I went to law school to do that. And I came back from law school. I got my first job while studying for the bar at a publishing company, where I was making CDs that they would take and pitch the songs of the songwriters. And then after I passed the bar exam, the only interview I could get at that time was for a social media specialist job. And I took the job and I said, I can do your law work too. And so by the end of that time with the company, I was the chief marketing officer and general counsel, which is not maybe the typical thing that you draw up as you go along, but here we are, and it's been a really rewarding path for me.
That's awesome. And so you're mixing in a very unusual background for a marketer, but you had a specialty, or you have, I assume you still are a member of the bar, I don't know, in law, which applies to the way that businesses think and operate. Can you talk a little bit about what that area is?
100%. So I've been an intellectual property attorney since 2011. I still maintain my license and still a boutique practice as well, because it's crucial to me. My core mission is to help creative people do the creative thing while I can handle the business side. And so I've been able to do that both as a marketer, where we're handling the operations of, you know, what happens when you fill out a form on a website. Well, you don't need to know that. We'll figure that out for you. But also as an attorney, I don't want my music to be stolen. I don't want it to be appropriated. I want it protected. And so I can help them do that as well, which is another way to support kind of why I was placed on this earth, in my opinion, which is to help the creative do the creative thing. I don't have original ideas. I don't think I'm the creative person, but I'm going to help that creative person maximize their potential and amplify their message as far as it can reach.
You know, there's an argument that nobody has original ideas. Everything's iterative at this point. But I appreciate the point that you made. You also had a little excursion into tax strategy as well, if I remember, if I've read correctly. And the reason I want to bring all these things up is because I think that background, that varied background, really sets you up for thinking about the role of marketing in a business quite right. differently from the typical marketer. And I know just from our very brief chat before we hit record that, you know, that's at the core of the work that you're doing in the marketing space with your business Leverage Brands.
Yeah, 100%. Because number one, don't ever own a tax strategy business. That's the worst idea possible. April is just, you can't do anything else in April but taxes. And that was not for me. But what it set up, Dave, it was just an understanding that even in your passion, even if you're passionate about something, there's not one fulfillment of that passion. There's different ways that you can approach getting that passion to as many people as possible or helping as many people as possible with whatever that message is. And in marketing, it's the same thing. I mean, that's why we started with that quote, right? You're going to run into locked doors. You're going to run into the wall. Are you willing to shift the rigidity of a system or procedure or process to tailor it to what's going to get that particular message as far reaching as possible? And I think every marketer needs to start thinking that way. There's not a tactic. There's not a specialization. It's how do I get this message out? And then the tactics support that strategy.
Yeah, I love the philosophy behind that. The funny thing about that quote is that it says find successful tactics. And I was like, wait a second. It doesn't mention strategy, but I think that, you know, the idea of really starting from, we have to have flexibility. And then we have to try a bunch of things. And to the point that's in the quote, when we find the successful things, then we want to double down on them, right? Back when I was in the Facebook ads world years ago, around 2010, when this was very early on in that world, I would have to explain this to my clients, right? Who this is the first time in history that you would have a small business in the position of being able to run a lot of ads and learn very quickly, right? It used to be maybe the local newspaper, maybe you have some radio spots, but then this online advertising gave a small business the opportunity to do what larger businesses had been doing for years with bigger budgets in sort of old school traditional media, which was test. And so I would talk about the advantage, the opportunity to test and find the winners and get rid of the losers as quickly as you could and then double down on the things that were working. So I really love that point. And when I was asking you a little bit about some of the stuff you wanted to cover, you pointed very specifically to the book, which is over, I think it's your left shoulder, unless you're okay. I don't know.
That may or may not be reversed. Vanna White it right there.
Yeah. So and I think that's a little bit of you know, sort of the idea that's in that book, plus a whole bunch of other stuff. The book is called, from what I can see, Every Step Counts. And I wonder if you can share a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So one of the clients that we work with, his book is over my other shoulder, is Jerry Jenkins, who is the preeminent writing teacher online. And he was approached to make a creative writing program. And one of the, I guess, classes that they wanted to create was one on book marketing. And so my business partner, David, and I, we started looking at all the different book marketing options out there from, you know, on Amazon, just to see what was there. And we didn't see what we wanted to see, because we don't think book marketing or any marketing really is about tactics as much as it is strategy, or tactics as much as mindset. It's almost like the strategy is to try as many tactics as you can. That to me is marketing. You try as many things as you can and you measure it. And when there's a result that works, you continue with it. Again, we're circling back to this quote over and over. But for me, I said, David, you're not going to believe this, but we have to write that book. And we had about 60 days before it was due. I said, we can do this. We'll just put down what we've learned in our time together, because he and I worked at the previous company. We've been working over a decade together at this point. And when we put it together, we actually said, well, I think this will help more people than just these classes that we're doing. So we've started to launch this book. But it truly is. It's a mindset exercise. It's not a tactic exercise. Marketing your book is not, it's not nearly as much about what you do, even how you do it. It's about why you do it. Why are you willing to go through this process? Writing a book is arduous. It's a task. Marketing a book is arduous. It's a task. What's that central reason why you're going to continue down the path when it gets hard, when it gets difficult, when you hit that locked door? And if you have that why, it allows you to be flexible with the how, and then you can use the different tactics to allow you to reach the goal, because you're not beholden to one.
Well, and I would imagine that for the type of thought leader author that you have a lot of experience working with, the book is not the thing that's making them their money in the first place, right? The book is a part of the process, and maybe it's an entry point, but that right. audience is then being taken somewhere else. And so you got to figure out strategically, what role does the book play? And how do you then move somebody who appreciates the value that's delivered in the book to the next stage in that relationship?
Yeah, 100%. How does it fit in? I don't know about you, David, but I love puzzles. I know I'm a nerd. I get it. My 6-year-old today said, "Dad, what does nerd mean?" And then he said, "Oh, you're a nerd." And I said, "Yep, that's right." So I like puzzles. Yeah. I like to do puzzles. But as you're looking at a marketing strategy, it's the different pieces of the puzzle. Where do they fit together? How do they fit together? And that's going to be different every time based on the picture you're trying to create. And so you have to be willing to take a piece like a book and say, okay, where does this fit in? For us, it was kind of that tip of the spear marketing effort, right? It's, hey, I'd love to be on your podcast to talk about my book. That's kind of where it fit for us. For Jerry, he's written 209 books and sold 70 million copies. It's more crucial to him.
Yeah.
Than it is to us. But that doesn't mean you put less effort into it, or you don't put the best content you can into it. It means that you realize its spot and you don't expect it to do too much in your lift. And I imagine it's the same thing, David, like you mentioned with your Facebook ads. Some businesses are built entirely on Facebook ads. Some businesses use Facebook ads to augment organic leads, or some just use it for brand awareness. But they're all going to use the same tactic differently to achieve their result that they're going after. And you just have to, you have to look at it that way, that it's a tailored process to each individual message using the same pieces.
Yeah. You work with a lot of folks who are either authors or creatives in some respect. You used the word thought leader, I think was the phrase that you used earlier, and also in other sort of mission driven organizations as well. And when I think any marketer starts with a new client, you see all the things that they've done up to this point. And I know that's sort of part of the way that you get a relationship started. And I'm curious, what are some of the common things that you see out there? I was going to use the word mistakes, but often they're you know, mistakes out of ignorance, and they work. But
that's right.
For a future client, they don't actually have a sense of the fact that there might be anything wrong. They just don't know what the opportunities are that they're currently missing. So I'm curious, right. what sort of things you're seeing out there that could be improved upon or might be missing in a lot of the you know, prospective clients that you look at?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that one of the things we see a ton is that they have a tactic that they have used and they know that it has worked. They don't know why it has worked. And so one of our key tasks is going to be to dig in, why did that work and where else can we use that why to do something else that's in a similar vein. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, David, what we're seeing is people are doing things currently that used to work. So a lot of times we're called in when something that used to work is not working anymore. They say, how do we fix this thing?
Can you give an example of that?
Yeah. So we had actually it was a podcast. We were working with a thought leader and they had a podcast that had kind of just stagnated on the download side. They said, we don't know why it's not working anymore. And so we dig into the data and we say, okay, you have people listening to the podcast for about 20 minutes and you're doing a 40-minute episode of the podcast. And your downloads have stagnated because they're not getting the value out of the second 20 minutes of the podcast. It was all valuable, but they weren't getting the value out of the second one. So the question became for us, one, can we optimize the systems? There was some software savings that we could do just by optimizing the systems. But two, can we increase the downloads? The answer was as simple as saying, cut that episode into two pieces and release two a week. And we doubled downloads in the first week because we looked at the data. We saw what was working, which the podcast was working. People were engaging, but they weren't engaging how it was being presented anymore. For whatever reason. So we take that data and we run a test of saying, let's split it in half and see what happens. And the downloads doubled in that 1 week. And they continue to do that because of that test. And so it's being willing again to hold loosely what you're doing so that you can get your desired result. There are no sacred cows in marketing. There can't be. You can't say, we've done this always, so we're going to continue to do it. You say, we've done this always, and it's either working or it's not. And it's a meritocracy. If it's not working, scrap it, fix it, or figure something else out.
Yeah. There's a great story that Dan Kennedy tells about a client he was working with who calls him after some ad that they had put together was running on the air for a month or two. And the guy said, you know what, this ad isn't working anymore. I'm tired of it. Let's take it off the air. And there was no data to back it up. It's just that, you know, he or his wife had seen the ad so many times, it was stale to them, but in fact, right, it was really working. Right. So this concept of, the data is going to guide us is a pretty important concept that I think a lot of businesses don't really consider.
Right. Especially with thought leaders. And I'll talk to your thought leaders out here for just a minute. Let's talk to you guys. Here's the thing. When you're starting your business on this product market fit level, it's about your gut, right? You have to have a gut feeling that you know what the market needs and you put it out there and they respond to it. And that's where your initial success comes from. But after that initial success, you can gather data and customer feedback and you can continue to be an integral part to their lives by using that to create new offerings and new things that you're going to put in front of them. And I think that's where it stops. My gut got me this far, so it'll get me to where I need to go. And there's a great book, Marshall, somebody wrote it. I can't remember his last name. Sorry, Marshall. What got you here won't get you there.
Oh, yeah. Goldman, something.
Yep. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So what got you here won't get you there. And in that book, your gut got you here, but it's not going to get you to a sustainable business that's not based on your thought leadership. Mm-hmm. Like if you want to ever step back from that business, you got to look at the data and build something scalable that goes beyond you. And the data is going to inform that. So we always say, if you have data, go with data. If you have your gut, go with gut. If you have both, go with your conviction. So sometimes that conviction may be informed by both. And you would have multiple options. But you need to let data have a role in what you're building. Because if you don't, the market will change. I have one more example, David, just real quick. Jerry, who we worked with initially, his audience was built on his huge bestseller series, The Left Behind series, that came out in the 90s. So most of our people were coming from that. And about 3 years into our engagement with him, we were noticing that things were just not hitting as well. The copy wasn't resonating, engagement was down. And what we realized was his YouTube channel was taking off. He had something like 170,000 subscribers to his YouTube channel. That's a completely different audience than the church groups who were reading Left Behind. Mm. So we had to change the way that we talked to his audience because of where the leads were coming from. And when we looked at the data, we were able to see that answer, even though in our gut, we might've thought it was these people who had been with us the whole time. The audience had changed. And if we didn't go with the data, we would have lost the engagement.
I thought you were going to go in a different direction when you started telling that story. And I didn't know about his YouTube channel, but what I did know was, right, you started with one product line that he had, and then there was a problem, right? And I'm tying this back to something that I noticed on your website, which is something I rarely see on a marketing company's website. Now, old Madison Avenue advertising firms used to do this, but very few modern day marketers do this. Do you know where I'm going with this?
I don't. You have to tell me. This is, I'm excited.
Front and center on the what you do, product development. How does that fit? I know the answer to this. How does that fit with marketing?
It's inextricably intertwined. How about that? You have to listen to your audience. And if you're getting the market feedback from the ads you're running, the emails you're sending, the surveys that you're putting out, hopefully you're putting out surveys. If you're getting that, then you also are getting what your audience needs for the next thing that you need to launch to them. And so one of the core pieces that we've done with Jerry and with others is to say, hey, okay, we're going to look at all your survey data. We know your audience. We've done an empathy map template. We're going to go through and we're going to say, these are the next four products in the pipeline. Let's pick the one that we feel the best about based on what your audience has talked about. And so we've developed, gosh, David, I don't know, a dozen, maybe more than that, products for Jerry based on that audience feedback. And based on really them pulling out their credit card and saying, yeah, I want to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. And the most recent example of that just launched today in this studio about 2 hours ago. So.
Excellent. I want to know more about that, but we'll just have to wait, won't we, until it hits the market. So as you were talking about that, I was thinking, well, this is kind of like line extension, but then I realized it's not, right? Because a brand that has established itself and its reputation, they're just looking for maybe more purchases from the marketplace because that brand is supported. So let's say, you know, a soda brand that adds additional flavors to their lineup or something. Right. But what you're talking about with thought leadership, with artists, with creatives, that's a sort of a different relationship with the audience, kind of like the how can I help you further or what other, you know, stuff would you consider? And I mean, this is not the space that you necessarily focus in, but it's really easy to understand this when it comes to something like a musician where right. You're just going to buy the next album and the next album and the next album. Although I don't know that people buy albums as much anymore. But you're following the creative path of that artist on an ongoing basis. So I'm curious to understand a little bit how that works in the space that you live in, as opposed to sort of the traditional product-based, you know, Procter & Gamble kind of business.
That's a great question. We have always been more of a partner than a digital marketing agency. We've kind of leaned more into the digital marketing agency over the last 6 months because we want to share this process with more people. But for Jerry specifically, for a long time, he was the only person we worked with. And then we limited ourselves to about four clients a year where we were doing similar strategic plans for what is that next iteration? What marketing strategies do we need? But also, what other products do you need? To kind of round out your product suite. And it's truly a matter, David, of we don't want them to go anywhere else, right? We want them to be included in this brand ecosystem. And so we want to be able to provide everything about the particular niche that you need. So for writing, we're going to let you know how to write a book. We're going to let you know how to build a platform. AI, this is a huge thing in writing right now. It's a huge thing everywhere. So we're going to have the resource that we're going to send you from us about these things, even though it might not be something that we're selling, you know, because I don't know that anybody wants Jerry, and he would say this too, who's in his 70s teaching them about AI.
Yeah,
he is using it and everybody has that place. But, you know, you're going to continue to be that go-to resource in the space because we want that dominance in the niche. And that dominance in a niche allows you to use your depth to go wide. You use the depth to gain breadth and gain more people because they're coming at you from all different entry points and you have everything that they need for their writing journey within that ecosystem.
Yeah. Okay. I want to shift gears a little bit because back when we were talking about the book, Every Step Counts, one of the words that I thought I heard you saying and maybe you have to clarify this if I got it wrong, was mindset.
Mm.
Right. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about, you know, particularly when we're talking about clients of yours who are personal brands, right? An individual, and it's part of what they're selling is the relationship with that individual. What that means to somebody versus, you know, again, we'll go back to the Procter & Gamble's, right? I don't know who is the leader at Procter & Gamble, the face of Procter & Gamble, because it's irrelevant. That's right. But with a lot of the work that you're doing, there's a person at the center of that. And I imagine mindset is a big part of that person, because they're selling themselves.
That's right.
To a certain extent, yeah.
And what do we hear from personal brands all the time? I don't like selling. I don't like selling myself. I feel icky. Yeah. That's what they always say. And so I think a big part of what we talk about in our book is understanding that you have a message to share that's crucial to get out there. You wouldn't be so consumed by the message if you didn't need to share it, if the world didn't need to hear it from you. And so we are trying to get you past that initial, oh, I'm not a salesman, to understanding that if this is a message that you truly believe that the world needs, then you have to be the one to share it, because nobody else has been gifted with that message to share.
Yeah.
And so you have to start looking at yourself differently. You are not just you. You are you, but you're also you, the brand. I love, there was a personal brand when it was kind of coined in 1997, they started talking about You Inc. And I thought that was a really interesting way to view this, because you're no longer just you, the person. You're also you, the company.
Yeah.
And if you're you, the company, what does that company need to do to provide for its customers? Because that's really what it's about. You're not becoming a personal brand just to make money or just to influence or increase your own life. You're doing it to help other people. And to help those other people, what does you, the company, need to do? It might mean you need to talk about things you wouldn't necessarily otherwise talk about, because they need your perspective on those things. Might be that you need to make a product that you wouldn't otherwise make, because they need to hear your spin on that product. Mm-hmm. It might mean that there's a trend that you need to come out and speak against, even though you're not comfortable doing that, because they need to hear a contrary spin on the trend. But because you are a company and not just you, you need to provide what your customer needs to build that trust, to build that relationship, and to ultimately foster the sale, right? But to do it in a way that's authentic to who you are as a person as well. Yeah. So that melding of person plus company is what we really try to teach, is this mindset of you are not just you, you are the brand. Mm-hmm. So what does the brand need to provide for their customer?
As you were talking, I was thinking about this J. Abraham concept of if you believe in what you're selling, you have a moral obligation to go out there and make sure the world knows, you know, that you can solve the problem that you can solve. And so, I think a useful reminder for a lot of folks who are uncomfortable. I'm horrible at selling, but I'm now convinced that I have a responsibility to make sure that people know how I might be able to help them. Right. And that's at least, you know, part of the transformation. There's a couple of directions I'm thinking about going here, and we have to wrap up in a moment or two, but I'm curious that transformation or that transition that somebody has to make, right? Mm-hmm. If it's not something that comes naturally, this is a process. How do you guide somebody into becoming that new version of themselves in order for the brand to fit with all of the other strategic planning work that you're doing?
That's a great question. And I love it, because we just got done doing several dozen marketing strategies for authors through something we call Platform Blueprint. And when we did that, one of the things that we hammered home for them is that you have to know your core values. You have to know your core customer. And you have to know your core message. We call it your one sentence. Give me one sentence on what benefit you bring to your customer. We leverage brands. It's our company name. We leverage brands. And so for them, we want them to get that specific with it, David, because if they can carry that why through the trials and tribulations, if we want to call it that, of marketing or of selling or of building a brand or writing a book or whatever it is, if you can carry that why through, that's what carries you to get to the end. It's understanding that you can't withhold good. I love that J. Abraham said that. He got it from Solomon in the Bible. It's in Proverbs. If you can't withhold good, if it's within your power to give that good. And so I think that that's crucial to understand. What is your why? That mission will carry you. What are your core values? That'll tell you how you're going to do it. And then who's your core customer? And if you can really focus in on those three things, it's going to give you a step up on 97% of the people who are out there, because they haven't done that mind work, that mental reset to say, if I'm a business, I need to know my mission. If I'm a business, I need to know my core values. And I also definitely need to know my core customer.
Yeah, brilliant. I love it. For folks who want to get a little bit more insight into how you help brands, you have a really interesting sort of next step in the process, which is to dig into what's going on in the business right now to see where there might be an opportunity to go. Can you talk a little bit about that and let folks know where they can find out more?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we've opened up some time on my calendar. It's leveragebrands.co/pod, P-O-D. And in that time, I want to get to know a little bit more about your business so that we can identify what are the things that we would audit if we come alongside of you, if we partner with you, what are we going to audit to make sure that you're getting the most results out of the activity you're doing? I think it's so tempting, David, as you're building a business, thought leadership, mission leadership, whatever it is, to get caught up in the activity and checking off a box of what you're doing. But if that activity isn't leading to the results that you want, that's where we come alongside of you. And in that call, we'll kind of identify those things together. So again, leveragebrands.co/pod.
Excellent. And we'll, of course, have that in the show notes as well. Chase, who would be kind of the ideal type of individual, aside from the types of folks we've been talking about, right? Authors and thought leaders, to take advantage of that offer?
So in our own mission statement, we call them message bearers. If you're bearing any message, whether that's a nonprofit, a thought leader, even corporations, B corporations, et cetera, if you are bearing a message, we'd love to talk with you. And we think we can help.
Excellent. Well, again, that's leveragebrands.co/pod, P-O-D. And I'm thrilled that we had an opportunity, Chase, to chat and learn both about your background and what you've been doing since law school and really digging into sort of your philosophical approach around how to position a personal brand and the kind of the overall strategic approach that you take. So I thank you for joining me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, David.
Indeed. Folks, if you know somebody who can benefit from listening to the episode you've just heard, please share it with them. Until next time, my name's David Baer. See ya back here again real soon. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.